So thousands of you have already downloaded the brand new High Performance app to unlock your own version of High Performance. And now the big news is we have some brand new features, some masterclasses, exclusive content, all on our new upgraded Plus subscription service. All you need to do is head right now to the High Performance app and discover the brand new world of High Performance Plus. Details and loads of frequently asked questions are on our website right now. Hi there, you're listening to High Performance, the award-winning podcast that unlocks the minds of some of the most fascinating people on the planet. I'm Jake Humphrey, and alongside Professor Damien Hughes, we learn from the stories, successes, and struggles of our guests, allowing us all to explore, be challenged, and to grow. Here's what's coming up today.
Of course, there's still the connotations about a male model, but often the conceptions are completely wrong. If you have not got imposter syndrome, you are not challenging yourself. If you're sitting there every day going, I'm very comfortable, I know what I'm doing, put yourself in a situation that's kind of scary. And I've always kind of done that, thinking, what on earth am I doing here? But it's a massive challenge and it scares the living daylights out of me. But the feeling I get from taking, you know, sort of achieving that is worth it.
So welcome to High Performance, David Gandy, a man who turned the male modeling industry on its head. One of the most recognised models on the planet, a man who's been at the top of his game for over 20 years. But who actually is the man behind the good looks? The insecurities, the ambition, the hard work, the rejections, the lessons. It's all on its way in this fantastic episode of the High Performance podcast. And you can actually get even more from David Gandy. On the High Performance app, he will actually share with us the secrets to his daily gym routine. So you can find out what he does to stay in such incredible shape. If you want that extra free content, then just download the High Performance app right now. Right, let's do it. David Gandy on High Performance.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
David, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, guy.
What is high performance to you?
High performance is seeing something as maybe a success to people. Whether how you gauge that is up to you, but I always... Winston Churchill said, you know, success is defined by him from going to failure without lack of enthusiasm. That, to me, is high performance. If you can keep doing that, and we all know, even on a daily basis, people think of a failure of business or financially, everything else, but there's failures every day. And you have to sort of overcome those and still high perform and still try and be the best, and it's problem solving. And I think if you can still have that enthusiasm and keep on going and going and going, and you ever meet some of the most successful people with like a high performance, is they're just overcoming failures, problems in the way, but they can see fair enough in the future to go, and I'm going to keep plugging away at this. And to me, that sums up so much of my career, is just things have gone wrong, but it's still belief and enthusiasm to higher perform that you know you're going to get there in the end. So that's kind of what it is to me.
So if we rewind as many years as you like, when did you first realise that actually success is keeping on going forwards despite challenges, despite struggles, despite failure?
Probably learned it at school. You know, this is not going to be a big thing. I was bullied at school and all these different things, but I didn't quite fit into school. Didn't fit in with the people, always do different things at certain years.
What way?
I can't really tell you, it put me almost, I say it put me in good stead, because I didn't worry about anyone else. I didn't worry about what they said. I didn't join, try and fit in. I just sort of kept myself to myself and not trying to follow the crowd or do the same thing. And I realized that was what people call now as a little bit disruptive, because that's basically what I did in the fashion industry and what I'm trying to do now.
So let's fast forward a little bit to when you decided to eventually go to university and then promptly walk away from completing your university degree when you got the opportunity to be a model. I wonder whether that disruptor mindset was present then as well. And I think it'd be interesting for people how you came to what is a huge life decision when you're that sort of age to quit university.
By that point, and I had done, I don't know, 2¾ years at university, and it's madness. I had a couple of modules to go. And I was like, I'm out. And people were like, how are you out? You've got a couple to stay. And I was like, no, there is an opportunity here and I'm going to take it. And that's when I got the contract with Select Model Agency. I wasn't the right look at the time. I wasn't the right build. I was very green into the fashion industry. Didn't have a clue how it worked. But there was an intriguing element to it. And then started to observe. And I always say it's 5 years of observing. I didn't get many jobs. I was doing okay, but it wasn't particularly what I wanted to do. But I could see where it could lead. So after that observation, I was looking at the female models. And we all knew the female was the female supermodels. You don't even need to know their surnames. You've got, Chrissy, Cindy, Naomi. And I was like, you don't even need to know their surnames. This is how, but you couldn't name a male model. And I was like, why is this? And I was intrigued by it. I'm curious of why this was. And you had big models at the time that you wouldn't know names of, but we knew them in the industry. And they would get to like a certain ceiling. And then that was it. Almost like everyone went, oh, that's as far as you can go. You can't go any further than that. So that's why a lot of models were then going to acting or music or something else. So my curious side was, well, how did the female models do it? And I was very fortunate to work with Naomi and a couple of others. And I asked them, and they said, almost some ways, Chrissy Turnton, sort of came. And I could see she came with not an entourage, but just a couple of members of good teams, PRs. And I said, this is a business. This is a brand. You are a brand. You've built, that name is, when you just say Chrissy or Naomi, you instantly know it. So it's that recognizable. And why hasn't a guy done this? But you need a platform to be able to do that. You needed to be known outside the industry.
Yeah. So what were guys doing then that was different to that?
They weren't running it as a business. And they didn't have the PRs. They didn't have the managers. They had agencies, but they didn't have a brand. They didn't name, So we then got Light Blue with Dolce & Gabbana. There's a whole story how we got that.
Go on, tell us.
I said to my agent, Tandy Anderson, I said, I'm out. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to do something else.
And she said, stage was that?
That was a stage when actually I was doing a lot of commercial catalog work. And then it's, you are traveling the world, you're earning good money, but it wasn't what I wanted to do.
So how many years in are you at this point?
4½, 5.
Right.
And
what was that not fulfilling then?
Anything I wanted to do in the industry, it was you weren't working with the best creatives, you weren't leaving any form of legacy. You were seeing these big campaigns, you weren't part of it, you weren't working with, not insulting the photographers, the greatest photographers. And that's what I wanted to do. And I always had in my head, I looked at the Levi's guys, or that was, remember the Levi's commercials? And I was like, imagine if you could be in one of those commercials. And that probably would have been enough, to leave that iconic commercial. And I said, that's what I want to do. And she said to me, okay. She said, guys would kill to be in your position of what you're earning and what you're doing at the moment. And I was like, okay, but I see a different pattern here. I think we can go bigger. Now, a lot of agents at that point would have gone, you're mad. No, we're not. We're not trying to rock the boat here. Let's continue. She's earning her percentage. They're earning good money. I'm earning good money. She went, okay, I'm cancelling all of your clients as of tomorrow. You're not going to work for anyone because we need to change the perception of how you are in the industry from catalogue, commercial, to editorial, fashion, and starting branding. And that's exactly what she did.
Scary?
No, because I didn't have anything to lose because I didn't want to do it anyway.
Wow. Can I go back and just explore that first observation you had of male models and not household names and you're seeing females? So you've left university, you've gone into an industry that, by your own confession, you don't know a lot about, you're observing it. That willingness to almost pit yourself against these household names, these supermodels, as opposed to just seeing it as, how do I survive in this industry? How do I get by? Is quite an interesting dynamic. And I'm interested as to what gave you the confidence to look that far ahead rather than just look to make a living.
No idea, mate. It's once, I mean, I look back now and go, what were you doing? Like, that's like to have, but I didn't have anything to lose. And I think that was the, it's different now. Like, once you get to a point and you've earned the money and you've built your brand, to then take a chance of losing that, you're losing a lifestyle. To me, I was traveling the world, but I didn't have, you know, it's not the lifestyle that you wanted. But now I've got responsibilities. That's how I didn't have responsibilities. It was a lovely time. It was one of my favorite times. And you sort of imagine you can do anything. My whole point to my early 20s, even late 20s, was like, what can you do? It was a gorgeous thing. You had options. And that still to me was an option to go and do something else. But it was, Tandy who said, and everyone's saying, oh, you're so Armani. I remember this. Armani. And Tandy went, you're Dolce & Gabbana. You're Dolce & Gabbana. Forget Armani, forget anything else. You're Dolce. And I was like, all right, Tand, I'm going to listen to you. And then she orchestrated this. There was a party for Mariano Vivanco, photographer, and Domenico and Stefano were going to be there. So this was a party, and Tandy said, you're going to come to pretend to pick up an airline ticket that you've got to have to travel tomorrow. This was a complete orchestrated story. So I went there, and I said, hi, Mariano, thanks for having me. And there was a ticket that was produced, and I said, thanks so much. So let me just go and say hello to, come say hello to Domenico and Stefano. I said, hi guys, how are you? And they looked, and you could see they just went, okay. A week after I was on the campaign, to do the campaign out in LA with Steven Meisel. So I did the campaign, and then we went back to go and do the show and in Milan. And then Heidi called me, my agent, said, there's a negotiation started with fragrance. And a fragrance is the pinnacle of what you want in, as a model. Don't know what it is, it's Dolce. And we then found out it was light. Well, I didn't know it was light blue. It was light blue, Mario Testino. And then from there, that was the start of everything.
So can I ask you about the world of modelling? Because my only frame of reference for that is the film like The Devil Wears Prada or something like that.
Not far off.
Right. But I'm interested. I know nothing about the culture of it. I wonder if you could explain a bit about that to us.
I think there's something about the fashion industry is that mystery is the appeal to it. I think people get wrapped up in the culture. I'm going to say this now, I never really fitted in school, never really fitted in university, never really felt like fitting in the fashion industry. So I've very much been my individual person to within the industry. And I think you can delve in as much as into that as you want, or you can sort of stay quiet. Hopefully people say to me, you're quite grounded. You're back to your kind of Essex roots. And I say, yeah, that's the kind of way I've been brought up. So it's an incredible industry. And that's why I think there was a fascination to me to be more involved in it. But I always got to a point where instead of the industry using you, which I think it does to a lot of people, is I wanted to use the industry and be in complete control. And that's where I saw it. I didn't want to be... I saw a lot of people who... were told where to be, what to do, what to wear, how to do their hair, how to where they should be. And I was like, you're not in control of anything. So again, to turning a complete business, just turning it into a business model. So when we got light blue, that was it. It was, everyone knew me. They didn't know my name. They knew me as the guy in the white swimming trunks. So then we started to build a team, PR, the agencies, and to then build the name into a brand.
But you must have had to sell like the grand vision. Like, what were you thinking at that point? Were you thinking, I want the David Gandy brand to be here in 5 years or 10 years or next week, next month?
I always work in my head. I don't often tell people 5 year or 10 year plans. But that was, I think the underlying thing was build a brand, build a name, be in control of it. So my thought was, why do you want to work 350 days a year for different brands, earning this amount of money, when you can work for two brands, work for 6 days a year on quadruple the money? That was literally my logical thing. People, yeah, but that you, men can't get that. You can't get exclusive contracts.
So that's like, what the female models were doing.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, they work for. And you know, Cindy Crawford said, you know, I want a marriage. I don't want a one night stand with a brand. So you work with a brand, and that's where my longevity with M&S, Dolce & Gabbana, Jaguar, Vitabiotics, M&S. They all came about longevity. And working with them on a 3-year, 4-year plan. Those days, I mean, we still do that, but if you look at those days, have completely changed now. Like talking to brands about longevity, yep, above 6 months, I mean, they're just about social. The next, and I try and go and explain to a brand, look, this has to be a 2-year, 3-year collaboration.
So what do you take us into those meetings then? Because I'm interested of how you change minds and get people to invest in that longer term relationship.
Some of it's management who approach anyway. So, you know, Vitabiotics was sort of a meeting that came about where they were walking out of a meeting and they'd just come out of a meeting saying, we want to move away from just using sports people to more lifestyle. I walked in, had been using Wellman for a long time. It says on the thing, I've been using Wellman since I was 20. Not a lie, it's actually genuine. And I said, Tej, nice to meet you. I'm David. Your products are great. I really like, respect. I use your proteins. I use Wellman since I was 20. And of course, that just came about and they like almost light bulbs went off like around the room to management. They went, oh, hang on a minute. Let's just go back and we'll have a quick conversation. And they said, how do you see it? And I said to them, I said, look, I love what you do. I would love to go on and help you with the creative. I think that can be improved. And I think if you're selling a lifestyle, you need to sell it in shoots and creative. That's what I do. That's what we do to bring our team. And that, and we've collaborated together and we've seen that, Wellman do extremely, extremely well. Hence, we've been going nearly 6 years with them. Yeah, the biggest thing for me was, of course, there's still the connotations about a male model. Most people, as you said, you don't have anything, you don't know much. Or about the fashion industry, yeah, about the culture, about the people. But often the conceptions are completely wrong. Like, being that sort of Zoolander model, that's what you're seen as.
Yeah.
Like not much of a brain, being told what to do and all those different things. So when I walked into meetings, of course, I would hear it. People would go, what, we're meeting the guy in the white pants, this guy. So that was, I was like, right. So in the meeting, I had to straight away change that. Within the first 5 minutes.
So there's a lot of people listening to this that may be battling stereotypes in different ways. It might be race, gender, disability, religion. Mm. Yours is the stereotype of the dumb male model. So how do you go about challenging that stereotype?
Well, I've always sort of said you take on the doubters by being successful. That's the biggest hit on anyone. Anyone can insult you. No one can insult me as much as I can insult myself, by the way. Like that's, I'm my biggest critic.
I can imagine there's people listening to this that think that in many ways you won the genetic lottery. You've got a distinctive look. But I'm interested in the kind of self-talk that you engage in. Do you see that there's an element of luck, or do you beat yourself up for what you haven't done or what you can't do?
I didn't beat myself up, I don't think. I hope I worked my strengths. I always sort of said to people, you work within, there are still limits to what you can do. There's a lot of guys, and I don't look in the mirror and go, yeah, you've got it, it's what it takes. Because there are guys in every agency that are better looking, better models, into the fashion industry more than me. Always have been. The difference was, I just did it a bit differently. I ran it as a business, and had the name of the branding. That's the way I did it differently. And I said, yeah, I'm definitely not the best model. I'm definitely not the best looking. Never ever thought I was. For Wellwear now is my team. Which is my new clothing brand. My team literally have to force me to go and like model for my own stuff because I want to give the opportunity. I think there are better models that can do it than me. I've kind of always thought that. So it was always the business creative side that I've probably loved more than I did, more than actually being in front of the camera. And I keep trying to come back.
Do you have doubts about how you look or not?
You know, you can probably call that, in anything is like, there's an imposter syndrome. I think in anything, I think I've always had that. I think a lot of people have it, a lot of successful, if you talk to successful people, they've had it. But I always try and put a positive on something and said, you should have it. And they're, well, what do you mean by that? I said, because if you have not got imposter syndrome and you are not challenging yourself, if you're sitting there every day going, I'm very comfortable, I know what I'm doing, and that to a lot of people is absolutely fine. Not for me. I'm like, right, I've done this. What's that next? Where am I going from there? Put yourself in a situation that's kind of scary. And I've always kind of done that to this, putting yourself in and going, what on earth am I doing here? Probably why I don't really think, you know, I go to the British Fashion Award and go, what are you doing here on the red carpet? Someone's going to pull you aside and go, yeah, David, you've had a good 20 years, like, let's forget this. But it's all those situations. And that goes for like challenging other things in life as well, like, I don't know, powerboat racing that I've done and you know, racing in the Mille Miglia and all these different things. I'm not having a clue what I'm doing there. But no, it's a massive challenge and it scares the living daylights out of me. But the feeling I get from, you know, sort of taking, you know, sort of achieving that is worth it. There's always a bit of, you know, a reward at the end for a couple of days.
Have you got comfortable with people having an opinion about how you look, how you stand, the colour of your eyes, the waves in your hair, the size of your pecs? It's like, that's what the fashion industry is like. Mm. You are just standing there going, judge me.
Like, yeah, Joe, you have to have a thick skin. But you realise, again, you know, I'm now, I've done creatives and I have to cast models. I've been in the worst castings ever. You know, I'd like just, and I probably overcompensate. You know, I've been into where they look at your book, they don't even speak to you, and then they close the book and hand it to you and you walk out. Never ever going to be like that. And when I say overcompensate, I'm like, are you coming? And they're like, literally models are with me for half an hour because I'm chatting to them and getting to know them. But they have to be an ambassador for my brand. And I might like them. And I might think they're a great ambassador. But for that creative at that moment, I have to visually, you have to assess them. You know, is that the best person for the job? And you're assessing someone on the way they look.
If it isn't within the industry, the people at home looking at the magazines or the snipes on social media, you know, let's be totally honest. People look at you and think, born gorgeous, had a really nice, easy life. People took his photo and paid him millions of pounds for the privilege. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy to have an opinion about David Gandy, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. But it happens like that. But it can happen like that, Jim. You know, it's, there are people taken off the street and then next week they're shooting the Calvin Klein campaign or the Marni campaign. And it continues. Yeah. They don't have to work.
And we should celebrate that, right? Human nature should go in. Isn't that incredible that life can deal that for someone?
Would I have, maybe I wouldn't have liked, but a slightly easier, you know, going into the industry, yeah, would have loved that. It wasn't the funnest 5 years, you know, and there were constantly things where you just thought you were going to get one of them. I got the Ralph Lauren campaign and then I was on the way to the airport and they cancelled me. And you're on the way to the campaign, you're on the way to the airport and they said, sorry, we're going a different direction. That, to come from that high to that low, you just went, my God. And to pick yourself up to then go, okay. And I actually remember just like getting back home, sitting on the stairs and going, what am I doing here? Like, this is...
Tell us about that, because that sounds unbelievably brutal.
Well, that's something you have to get used to as well. The in the industry, there's lots of examples like that. I won't mention the name, but this is actually when I was, even had sort of a name and they brought me in to do a show. And I didn't fit the clothes. Clearly didn't fit the clothes.
Too big?
Yeah. I was always too big for a lot of stuff. They used to, you know, Tom Ford used to go, here's a big guy. I was like, am I really that big? I'm a 40 chest and a 30 waist. I'm like, I'm not big. I used to criticize the industry and go, look, maybe make sample sizes bigger than 36 or 38 and a normal person will wear them. And I again, put the clothes on. They said, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just get them on the runway. And then they looked at me and I looked at myself and they went, yeah, you can't go on. Literally pulled me off runway, go out in front of everyone, in front of all the guys. I'm like, where are you going? I went, we're going home.
So what do you do at that moment, though?
I don't know, have a gin and tonic.
And which I like as a strategy. But I'm interested in, how do you then pick yourself up to didn't put bother yourself me that, back in?
Okay, so I always say try and turn it on a positive. This was for a big brand. So to me, I would have walked in that show and you then would have been associated with that brand. To me, I was taken away, not working with that brand. There's other brands that are going to work with you on that. So if you're doing that brand, it takes you away from working with a lot of other brands. So positive, I'm not doing that. Other opportunities with other brands. there was one time we were out in LA and we went to, I'm not name dropping here, but I'm going to. I just shot the makeup with her makeup, Scarlett Johansson, for Dolce. And we then got flown to LA to do an alcohol brand with Scarlett Johansson. But I didn't realize at the time, and they didn't realize that we just went. So we got to LA and she said, David, have you seen the Dolce pictures? I have, they're amazing. And he suddenly had this like loud room, went a little bit quiet, and someone had picked up that we'd worked together before. So they was like, okay, so you go off to makeup, David, why don't you just go and sit in that corner over there for a second? I was like, okay, we sit there for an hour and no one's saying, you're going, should I be getting makeup, getting hair, anything? And they go, no, no, just stay there. And you realize when no one talks to you in the fashion street, something's wrong. You go, okay. So I sit there and go, literally waiting for my phone to call and it full calls. I was like, oh, there we go. Hi, Hyde. Hi, David. Yeah, they've pulled you because you've done the campaign with Scarlett. And I said, oh, but they're not going to pull Scarlett, of course. They went, no. I went, okay. I said, what's happening with pay? And they said, well, therefore, you get full pay. Don't have to do the campaign. I was like, okay. I went, I'm going to take a couple of days off. Went to hire a very fast car. Not the fastest car. Went up to Carmel. Had a nice weekend. Got paid. And didn't, and not associated with that brand. I saw it as a bonus. That sounds a bit egotistical and a bit sort of, there's not a negative behind that to me. I was like, yeah, absolutely great. Saw the campaign. It was shit. Glad I wasn't part of it. It was all win-win. And I always say try and turn something into a positive for everyone.
In that instance, it's kind of easy to turn it into a positive, right? Because you've got paid for doing something that you didn't need to do and you've come out well. There will definitely be times where it's harder to try and find a positive. And I know you do a lot of work for men's mental health campaigns, and so I'm sure you understand where I'm going with this. Like, how challenging has it been at times for your mental health?
I've always said that there have been dark times, and I don't think it's much to do with being in the fashion industry, though. I think that's just me. It can be a very lonely, you are traveling the world. I said, sometimes you're going for days without really, sometimes you're going from job to job, but you're going, you might go from London, then you're going to Barcelona, and then you're doing a job, then you go from Barcelona to somewhere else, but not just to get to another location. And this is like a 3 or 4 day trip to get somewhere. And if you don't know anyone, you're going from airport to sitting in an airplane seat to going to a hotel to going back to an airplane. You're not really speaking to anyone for days. I think it's quite weird. It is a strange concept. Now, if you speak to my other half, you'll realize that I don't talk that much. And she kind of says that. It's like, how's your day? Yeah, it was fun. You know, that's basically very men, as my father was, her father's the same. You know, it's, men are very much like that. I think you can be quite solitary, and there's a difference between lonely and loneliness. And I was never lonely, and I used to enjoy that. And actually, my other half has had to understand that I need time to myself. And that's with the dog, and that can be with the children, but it's, there is a time where I like, and she doesn't understand that. She's at a party, she engulfs being at parties, events, being around people. To me, it drains me, and I need to be the exact opposite. And she used to laugh at me. She goes, what did you do last night when we were first dating? I went to cinema. Who with? Myself. Where'd you go? Well, I went to dinner. Who with who? Myself. I was very much, and that's probably going back to school, I was very comfortable. And I think you should be, it worries me if people aren't comfortable in their own company.
Yeah.
I always think there's something wrong there. They have to have other people's opinions or other people to build their ego. Yeah. And I didn't need that. So people criticize and build an ego. I never particularly needed that.
But you have a dark time. So how have they, when you talk about a darkness, how does that manifest itself? What have you learned to combat that?
If you kind of think about it, when I'm working, I do have so many projects on the go. I drive people around the bend. I'm finishing, not even finishing one, there's another idea, and there's another idea, and there's something else I want to do. There's loads of stuff going on. And I realized I need to do that. It's when you slow down sometimes. In my 20s and 30s, it was just, I want opportunities and work. It wasn't selfishness, but there was a point where I'm going to take hopefully every opportunity, everything that comes about, and I don't want to have to worry about anyone else during that time. It was me, and I need to build this career. And it's put me in good stead to be able to you know, ease off a little bit now and be with my family and my girls and not worry so much. Still got a million projects on, but not to have to travel in. And I loved it. So, but if that stopped, then that's my mind would start, you start probably thinking. And you would always have to think, is this my last campaign? Is this my last job? Is this it? You know, I'm on.
Do you get those thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. You never know. You walk off everything. You have a good one. You think, is this the last one? Is this the last time I'm going to work for this brand? But you then realize that that's why I suppose I have many projects and many working with many brands, because if one, you know, and you do stop eventually. Every collaboration, everything, you know, eventually ends. But you then just have to work on the next thing. So that's why I sort of built it for my mind, you know, my mindset in some ways. But yeah, it's... I don't think the industry is, because I'd never really listened to them. It was a thing of when the industry, and I wasn't a big guy when I was 20, 21, when I went to the industry in year 22. But, you know, I was bigger, and then I got bigger and bigger, because I took over the gym was my reset, was my escape. So, of course, if you're competitive, then you want to get bigger and you want to get muscly and you want to build. And I always say that, you know, I was always training before, and they go, well, you have to be fit. You don't have to be fit in the industry at all. You don't have to have the, you know, a great body. But in my mindset, that made me, I've always just done it for myself.
Today's High Performance Podcast is in association with AG1. And actually, the last couple of weeks has been a great reminder to me about why AG1 is so important for me, because I've been on the road. The fact I've been living out of a suitcase, I haven't had my routine, means actually I have missed taking my AG1 in the mornings, and I've honestly noticed the difference. I've had a drop in energy. I haven't felt great, because for me, AG1 is my daily nutritional insurance. It's good for my energy. It's great for my guts. It's full of multivitamins and minerals, pre and probiotics. It's all my key health products in just one drink. And I've got a great offer for you from AG1. If you're looking for a simple, effective investment for your health, you can get 5 free AG1 travel packs and a free 1-year supply of vitamin D with your first purchase. Just go to drinkag1.com/high-performance. That's drinkag1.com/high-performance to try AG1 for yourself.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So can you tell us a little bit then, David, around one of our favourite phrases we heard from, we interviewed Mauro Itoje, the England rugby player, and at his club Saracens, they've got a sign or an acronym stitched into the back of their shirts that stands for the shit that no one sees. So internally within their world, they value all the stuff that isn't in the spotlight. It's the work that goes on behind the scenes. And I'm interested, can you give us a bit of an insight then into the shit that no one sees for you, looking so good, doing these great modelling campaigns and all the other things around the brand?
We've probably touched on it, you know, about how you had, we've strategically had to work at that, and that's the meetings and the shit. Yeah. And No one hears about the campaigns that you got pulled from or the ones you got cancelled from last minute. That's a bit shit. But if you make it positive, you make it positive. There's always been a bit of a side to me they talk about in the fashion industry as well. Yes, you are very fortunate to look the way you do and have the body you do. But it's not attainable. Like they say, you know, are you creating an image that isn't attainable? So if I talk about in the physical form, I go, hang on, wait a minute. I've gone from being a chubby teenager to quite a skinny, you know, I shot up to like 6'2", 6'3". So I was quite skinny. I didn't like that. For my mental health, I wanted to be bigger. So I got bigger. And every evening when probably everyone else is having dinner, I'm at the gym. So I put, you know, even now with my two girls, I put the girls to bed. 9:30, I'm at the gym. I get home at 10:30. I cook dinner. I'm still working. My mobile phone's still on all throughout this whole business. And that's what I've been doing for 22 years. So no one understands that. No one sees you doing that. And of course, now with social, a lot of people do put it on, but I'm quite private in that respect. So no one sees the work that goes into it. And it's still a fascination in people when they say, how do you get the body you do? And you go, it's hard work. It's just training. You know, that's what it is. But I know a lot of, you know, female models, the Victoria's Secret models and all those, their training was incredible. They train like athletes to get to where they're, you know, to get the physique of what they have. When I'm saying you train like athletes, you really, really do. So there's a lot of shit that goes on behind things. But again, like in any business, you don't hear about it. You see the good side of it and people think about the good side.
Yeah, yeah.
When someone comes to me and a guy says, how do I get to a young model? How do I get to where you've got to? And I said, look, this is an impossible thing for me to tell you, but I've been doing this for 21, 22 years. And, you know, the one that always gets people is well, I didn't really have a big job for Dolce for 6 years. And you can see them switch off. They're like, switches, okay, 6 years, not waiting 6 years. I'm not saying you have to wait 6 years, but that's how long it took me. That's perseverance. So, you know, you have to believe in that my thought process of where I wanted to be was correct. And you can see like so many young people now, like, oh yeah, no, when do you think, well, I want to go and be a supermodel tomorrow. Yeah, okay, not going to happen. You have to be realistic. So, but that goes, as I said, in every business and every CEO I've met and every successful person, athlete, they've all been through, you know, you don't see the shit at the end of the day. You don't see, no one sees the hard work of a successful person.
Of course, there are shortcuts, right? Mm-hmm. And you're now in your 40s. I don't know whether you have fear about aging and looking different or whether that excites you because it moves you into a whole nother sphere.
I don't worry too much about it. But I've been fortunate enough that I rely on looks, but not as much as I probably used to. Yeah. And it's just aging. You know, it's just, I try my best. Also, if you look at a lifestyle that is traveling the world on aeroplanes, not much sleep for 22 years, nothing, you know, is good about that for aging or for skin or anything else. I believe in, you know, growing old gracefully. I think I look all right until I had kids.
Happens to
that ages you.
But the kids is actually a relevant point here because I think, you know, I like the fact that when people think, oh, David Gandy looks unattainable, you'll say, no, that's not true. If you put the time and the work and have the patience, you know, you can build muscle, right?
Anyone can. So that's basically it. Yeah.
But now you could happily have a filler here or a Botox there or an injection here or there to make your face look different. Would you do that? Or is actually the sort of the honesty of this more important than that? Because there is a sort of something toxic about that, particularly for young people looking at those in the public eye and seeing, I don't know, people that make that decision.
I think the footage, sorry, someone put it this way without going too far with Botox and all those different things, is these days is people ask me how long to get ready to red carpet. I'm literally 20 minutes. Now, that's not boasting. It's like I don't have time. I know roughly. I'm very fortunate over the years built a wardrobe. But, you know, for young people to look at these people on the red carpet nowadays and the famous stars, the amount of work that's gone into That's a team of stylists. That's a grooming team. That happens weeks before, you know, that event. I'm sort of more genuine, like, yeah, I might get a suit made, but, you know, very rarely do anymore. So how long did it take you? Literally 20 minutes. Because that's just a lifestyle change. And then that's, but I've always kind of been that way. So in some ways, it's like, I don't have the time. That's not, that doesn't interest me whatsoever. And I see this sort of society that everyone's worried about what everyone else is doing, what everyone else looks like, what everyone is aging, what everyone else is doing, and following exactly the same as everyone else. Like globalization and fashion has led to this. Everyone kind of dressing the same a bit. And it was Eleanor Roosevelt who once said, you know, great minds talk about ideas, medium minds talk about events, small minds talk about other people. Now you can adapt that a little bit now.
Yeah.
But everything I wanted to get in the company, in my, you know, in everything I've thought about is ideas. I don't really care what anyone else is doing. I don't care what are the ideas. What are the ideas to, if there's problems, how can we solve them? That's the big thinking of everything. And that's what people don't seem to be able to do these days.
How many years old is Wellwear?
2 now.
Okay, so you're 2 years old and you've already got a collaboration with Packet, which is, you know, really recognisable around the world, right? So we have many entrepreneurs, many people building brands listening to this. How has it happened so quickly for Wellwear?
What, the collaborations?
I think just the growth. Have you been clear from day one that this is something that you wanted that quickly?
My own brand's been something I wanted in my head. I will not be any bones about it, guys. This is the hardest thing I've done in 22 years.
Why?
It's just a whole different ballgame owning your whole thing, being founder and creative director.
Let's get into that. Come on. What's hard?
Well, first, I'd probably say that when people want you to do something for their, to better their brand, they're very enthusiastic about you coming on and then helping you, and then because they're getting something from it. When you start your own brand, I learned this at M&S as well, is that people stop talking to you because you're a rival. And I heard this from brands. They were like, you know, autograph is killing, you know, David Gannett autograph is killing us, you know, at a brand. And I didn't want to do it, but it's disruptive. You know, one of the things we did in swimwear was pretty much, you know, I looked at all of Bob Brown. I was on holiday and I thought, I need to do something for David Gandy autograph. And I loved, all of Bob Brown is one of the pinnacle brands, incredible success. I said, well, what if we did those swim, but they're 150 quid. What if we did them at MS for 30? And we put the side adjusters and the colors and did that. We sold a pair every minute on launch. That's where I kind of look at, you know, doing all the time to, and, but, you are competition then. And you are competition in the industry you're in. So I think that's the difference. So where you could rely on people to help or you ask favors, that's now no longer. And businesses, there's some really ruthless business people around. And it's hard. It's really, really hard.
So what's been the biggest lesson you've learned?
Stupidly, to come back to originally what I've done in my in the fashion industry is do everything yourself. Bring it all in-house. We've been promised the earth by other brands, creatives, all these different things. And then you learn, yeah, you can't rely on, horribly, you know, terribly, you can't rely on anyone. That's where the team at Wellwear, they are, I mean, I can't thank them enough. We are all doing 3 or 4 jobs each.
How big is the team?
6 people. Not big.
And you wake up in the morning, go to sleep at night thinking of Wellwear. This is like
sometimes
laser.
Go to sleep at night.
Laser. Sometimes when you're asleep as well. I think that's something to point out though to people as well. If you're going to do the entrepreneurial thing, I mean, it is all consuming.
Yeah. I mean, collaboration with M&S and collaboration brands is different.
You can turn them on and off.
You can. Yeah. You can be involved kind of as much or as little as you like, but I was massively involved with M&S and I still, to this day, love M&S. Always did. That's why I worked with them. But we had a kind of a collaboration for 8 years. That's a long time in the industry. And then you go and you need to me, this was the last thing. Can I do it? This was the last thing. I didn't need to do it, but it was the last thing that was going to, if I hadn't done it 20 years, if this fails, if it succeeds, I would have gone, I wonder what if I hadn't done
what is it?
Clothing brand.
Can I do it? What to you is it?
I suppose it's a bit like anything. It's that risk and reward. Everything I've done, there's a little bit of risk. The risk of completely shutting down all my brands I worked with, you know, when I said to Tandy in 2005, there was a risk. It wasn't a risk to me at the time, but it clearly it was a risk. So, but if you, you know, judging on your name, high perform and get to that reward for achieving that is worth it.
So can you expand on your, on how you take risks? Because I've heard this theme crop up a number of times in whether it's you walking away from two modules left of the university degree to go and pursue a career in modelling. That's a risk, but you said I had nothing to lose. You decide that you're going to turn down brands to focus on, like, rather than work for 20 brands, you'll work for two and build a relationship. That's a risk. But again, you said, I had nothing to lose. Now you do have plenty to lose. So how has your relationship with risk changed over the years?
Going back to sports and many things, there's, you know, and in life, there's a 27 club. Apparently you have self-deprecation after the age of 27. Before that, I think we all know this as guys, we're scared, living that if I had a boy, because I knew he would try and kill himself in cars or sports or skiing or something. I used to. How me and my friends, you know, since I've known them throughout all life, I have no idea. The stupid things that we used to do. And then at 27, you don't think about the risks. And after that, you start thinking about the risks and what you're going to lose or what you could lose. And it changes. Changes in, you know, Formula One. Those guys at 25 don't think about death. Don't think about the risk. They just go for it.
Yep.
30-year-old would be like, ooh. And that, as a sportsman, you can't do that. You cannot have that doubt. You've just got to go for it. And I think that changes the more, it's good. You have success. You have lifestyle. I have responsibilities. You know, my children need to go to school. We have homes. Everything needs to be paid for. We have a lifestyle. I want to travel like I did with my parents. So of course you're not risking, but also that's management. Even if something happens, you've got, you've planned for those problems to happen and still be able to live. So it's not risking too much. Financially, I wouldn't say I'm a big risk taker because I don't know as much within that world. So when you're talking, a lot of people who was, put a lot of money into stock market and trading and all these different things. I've invested in 20 companies and I've got obviously brands and companies of my own. But I don't understand that as much. I just couldn't take those risks if I don't understand it. But there's something in me that for some reason I always said gut feeling. Any time I've ever not gone with my gut instinct, it's gone wrong. That's honestly true. And I thought, yeah, you knew this. Why did you do it?
Right.
And, we're going back to going from failure to failure. I've learned more from failure than I have from success. Sometimes I don't trust success. Something comes very easily. I don't trust it, and that's an anomaly. That why did that happen? But failure, if you keep on going, you're learning alone. As long as you don't carry on those failures.
So what would you say has been your biggest failing then, and what did you take from that?
If you go to Wellware, it, as I just said, trusting other people. And that's, we bought everything in-house. Cost us a fortune to do it. Ruined our business plan, everything else. If you don't know your purpose in life, find your passion. Your passion will lead you to your purpose.
Yeah.
And there's a purpose to this. There's got to be a purpose. It is to make, of course, every business is to make money, to be successful. That's, an ego thing. And I hope it will be. But there is, and taking on the big boys in the industry, I suppose that's my ego. So like, can I take the guys on and create this industry and disrupt a little bit? But there's a purpose behind this and a serious purpose. If we're all serious about the environment, then we need to talk about it, and there's a seriousness to it.
And while Damien's interested in the purpose, I'm interested in the process, because I think that's so helpful for other people. Like, are you CEO of this brand? Are you running this day to day?
Founder and creative director. And right. Yeah, as I say, we've all got about three hats on.
So how are you hiring people?
So my best friend, Charlie T, he started a creative branding agency. And during lockdown, he said, finally, I've got you in one place at one time. Let's have a chat. And I finished my M&S and we were in a point where I had 6 months, so I couldn't do anything. And I said, let's start brainstorming. And we did. And we came up with the concept of Wellware. No one is bigger than anyone else. No one is better. And I encourage everyone, and I'd never want to micromanage, never want to, like, everyone is there because they are the best at what they do. And that's why I trust everyone's. I have to make those decisions at the end. That's what I've done in the industry. I still have to be, I said, but leave this with me. And I say it to brands sometimes as well, or I say it to creators within brands. I said, blame me. If this goes wrong, I'll take the blame for this, because some of this, you know, corporates above that is not believing in this. So if it goes wrong, blame me, but it's not going to go wrong. So that's why I always sort of say to people. So yeah, I take that prompt, but it's a team effort, and they're just incredible at the moment. Is what we are, you know, is what we are achieved with not, you know, not very little. Hopefully, you need a visionary and you need someone to come along to really, you know, for our growth. But we are growing very, very well. But to take it to that next stop, to really, really sort of take on the big boys, then, you know, that's the next round of financing and everything else.
I wish you all the luck. I'm so excited for you to, you know, become a founder of a brand. And I think you spent your career actually breaking down doors for others to walk through, like the first male model to do what you did with branding. And now look what you do. You're saying to all of those guys who are used to just having their photo taken and being judged from the outside as, you know, good looking, but not that bright. You're saying, just show the world what you can achieve. And I think that's probably a big reason why this feels so passion-driven for you.
And hopefully that will continue.
Good luck. Right, we've reached our quickfire questions. The three non-negotiable behaviours that you and the people around you should buy into.
Drive, yep. Commitment, kindness, honesty.
Great.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received and why?
No one's given me that much advice. That sounds a really strange thing.
So what advice would you give to a teenage David just starting out?
Enjoy the moment more. There's times like my best moments of life, I don't even think I can remember, because I was already on to the next element. What can this lead to? What are we working on next?
If you could go back to one moment of your life, what would it be and why?
I could go on both my daughters being born, which is a magical moment. If I had to go on a work element, it was on a speedboat after shooting Light Blue, coming back with Mario Testino and the team and going, okay, so that's... this is what I've worked for. This is what I've, you know, this is what I've had. I've put up with all this shit for 5 years. I think this one could be special. It was the excitement of where this could lead. And I don't think, I've had those moments, but it was just that one was incredible.
Your biggest strength, your greatest weakness.
Greatest strength. Commitment, I suppose, to people.
Yeah.
To brands, to work and drive.
And your greatest weakness?
Trusting people.
And lastly, your one golden rule for living a high performance life?
Think outside the box.
Which you have done again and again. Listen, thank you so much for taking the time.
That Thanks, guys. Really
been such an interesting this. Journey from the beginning to here. I'm so excited to see where Wellware goes in the future. And
thank you.
Like it still feels like after all these years you're at the beginning of your journey, which is the most exciting place to be.
Thank you. And cheers, guys. Really, really
cheers,
enjoyed
David.
It.
Thanks, David.
Damien.
Jake.
Look, David spoke there about sort of being judged as a male model, but he is the antithesis of what you'd imagine a male model to be. And it's a great reminder that we all exist, putting people in boxes, framing people in this image that we believe. And I love it when he comes on a podcast like this and challenges our thinking. Like, what a bright guy.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it is a good reminder that sometimes that our brain naturally puts people into stereotypes, that a male model, as David said himself, has traditionally for years been mute and people then attribute that they must be dumb because you don't hear them speaking. They rely on the looks. And he's a great example that not to judge a book by its cover, incredibly handsome man, but also somebody that's got quite a lot of nuance, subtlety and deep thinking that's going on as well.
I mean, he said it in the podcast. I didn't belong at school. I don't feel I belong in the modelling world. I feel I've never belonged anywhere. And I think that's a really powerful realisation for people listening to this, not to think that they're struggling and nobody else is. You know, even David Gandy has lived a life racked with self-doubt and imposter syndrome and fear at times. That's great to know.
Yeah, definitely. I love that idea of marching to the beat of your own drum, though. The story told of sort of going in the library at school at lunchtimes because I didn't have anyone else to speak to. So I learned to be comfortable in my own company. you know, he's still doing that as a model now when he's going off and he says, I'll go and dine in restaurants on my own, I'll travel on my own. I'm not afraid of being in my own company. And I think there's something that we can all learn there, that we often distract ourselves with noise around us, but sometimes learning to be comfortable with our own thoughts, our own actions, and who we are ourselves gives us that authenticity that in David's work really shines through.
Indeed. Thanks a lot, mate.
Thank you, mate.
I really hope you enjoyed this conversation with David Gandy. If you can hit subscribe for these conversations wherever you get your podcasts, it makes a massive difference to us. But please continue to spread the learnings you're taking from these conversations. Remain humble, curious, empathetic, and find your own version of high performance. Take care.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.